Long time ago, I dated a comedian. Very, very talented. Really talented, but as it turns out, super dark. Mm. Like, way too dark for me. But what I've learned since that time is that was pretty normal for people who are comics.
Yeah.
A lot of big names in comedy, like a Robin Williams, struggle mm-hmm. with mental health issues. So that's what we're talking about today.
Yeah.
We're talking about depression, suicide, and comedy.
And comedy.
Because it makes sense.
Those things go well perfectly.
You would think.
Right.
So Brad Bonner is our guest, along with a guy named Ellis Rodriguez. Brad is a comedian who actually has started a comedy show about depression and suicide. And trust me, it is hilarious. Just weird. I know. It's really, really weird, except that it's so right. Because it was Freud who theorized that humor was this great release for anxiety. And we're going to talk a lot about that. So in this Dying to Ask, what Brad found while he was cleaning that actually kicked off this idea for a really funny show about depression, how he's now turned the idea into a concept that can be replicated across the country, his big goals for that, and why comedy kills, quite literally. Here's Dying to Ask.
I'm Deirdre Fitzpatrick, and I am obsessed with knowing how people do things. I write the book, they start the company, they go from idea to reality. I call it the art of the follow-through, and I want to know how people go from A to B. This is the Dying to Ask podcast.
Brad Bonner and Ellis Rodriguez, thanks for coming into the Dying to Ask podcast.
Certainly.
Thanks for having us.
This is the weirdest pitch ever. I get this Facebook message from someone who says, you should do a story about that comedy show about depression and suicide.
That's a weird pitch.
What?
That was probably my wife.
It was your wife, actually, now I think about it. And it was just weird enough that I finished reading it, and I thought, I should do that. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, that sounds hilarious.
It's hard. That's the hard. People are like, comedy about, so do you like make fun of suicide and stuff? Or how does that work? And it's like, nah, we just laugh.
Yeah, we just laugh about it. So what is the name of the show?
1 Degree of Separation, A Funny Look at Depression and Suicide.
Yep, that's what hooked me in already.
Just the title?
Title alone.
It's like we wanted the title to be a little disturbing because you don't want people to come to something like that.
Yeah,
well, good. Because you don't want people to come to something like that and go, oh my gosh, they're laughing and joking about depression and suicide. We had to make it. And then the 1 degree is if you don't struggle, somebody next to you does. Everybody knows somebody that struggles with depression. So it's not you, it's somebody next to you.
Interesting. So where did the show come from? Why did you decide to do it?
I had a couple of things happen. I had, I found a suicide note that I wrote in the sixth grade.
A happy place.
And what's funny is I knew it was there was no date on the note. And, it said, I don't want to live anymore. I just want to die. No one will ever miss me. And then, in the sixth grade, I sat next to Michelle Madsen in Mr. Jensen's class and I had a crush on her and we used to touch elbows. And that's a big deal when you're in the sixth
grade.
It's
a huge deal.
It is like your heart. And, so it's
over or under the shirt,
my heart,
elbows.
Elbows over. It's like it was like flesh to flesh.
Yeah. Ooh.
And we were on the front row, so like other kids could see
it. So like you could
right. Other kids could see it and everything. And so my notes said that.
Now I'm pretty sure you'd get expelled.
You're right. So my notes said that. I don't want to live anymore. I just want it. No one will ever miss me. And then my next entry said, I think Michelle Madsen's a fox. And that was it's like, oh, I remember that. That was sixth grade, Mr. Jensen's class. That was my timeline was because of who I had a crush on.
Yeah, and that was back when the word fox was cool.
Yeah. That's how old I am. That's how old I am. Yeah.
Was your 12-year-old self serious?
I think when I first read that note, I laughed about it and thought it was kind of funny. And then I just thought, sixth grade? That I've been struggling with this from the sixth grade. And I thought maybe junior high school, I know for sure I had a lot, but I didn't realize that it's been that long.
What's this?
The depression. And right. That I think it's just part of my brain. There's a lot of depression comes from childhood trauma, and I really had a good childhood. I had fun, and I think I just have that like a type 1 diabetic. They have a chemical imbalance in their body that they will always have. And I think that's how it is for me. And there's things I can do with medicines, but there's other things you can do, you know, there's other tools and things. But that got me thinking how I'm 56 and it's only been the last maybe 6-7 years of my life that I've ever talked about it, even to my doctor.
And I've known you for basically two or three years after I started doing comedy when I finally became significant at all.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't know that you had that, even though I... Here we go.
Here we go.
But my question to you was, what did you think it was before you knew it was depression? Because before you're talking about it with people, it's just this thing inside you that people are like, get over.
Yeah.
I was in the Marine Corps. No one's like, hey, how are you feeling, buddy?
Yeah.
You know?
So you also, Ellis.
Also. Incredibly depressed.
Yeah.
You can see by my face. This is
75% of comedians.
That I 100% believe.
Yeah.
Why is that? I mean, wasn't it Freud who did all that research and figured out it was kind of a defense mechanism for people who maybe do feel sad or depressed, that it's a way to deflect some
of comedy?
That? Yeah. Do you buy that?
It's therapeutic. I mean, it's funny, when we get together as comics, I made a statement to all of them, and they all just laughed. And I said, how many of you have had this? Like, it's a Wednesday, and you're like, I don't want to live anymore. I just want to die. And then you go, oh, I got a gig on Friday. Yeah, no, I can't do today. Maybe Friday. And it really, there's times where it keeps you alive, knowing that you're going to make people laugh, knowing that you have something to go to. And it is therapy. It's not enough.
Wow.
Therapy, right?
It's not enough for me, usually.
Yeah.
For me, usually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
you and Steph were saying, you know, you don't need it anymore.
Right. I do. Right. Yeah.
I do. It's a big part.
What's your story? You mentioned you're a Marine.
I'm a Marine. I went to, I grew up in Stockton.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I grew up in Stockton. So I just wanted to leave. And I ended up meeting a pretty girl. And we got married. I needed a real job suddenly. I was in the Marine Corps. You know, I wasn't what they call like well-adjusted. I was a great Marine, you know, but I was just like the light-skinned Zach Morris my entire life. I'm always getting in trouble. And there was something wrong with me, you know, but there was I had great parents. I had Marine Corps gives you structure. And if you're a little aggressive.
It's kind of an asset.
Yes.
I mean, I want my Marines to be kind of...
Sure. You're like, oh, this guy at the drop of a hat can kind of lose control. Like, okay, well, let's focus.
Or do 7,000 push-ups.
Exactly. And so I didn't think it was a problem, but I was always kind of funny and I was kind of goofy. And then I got divorced and I live in Stockton. And one day my grandmother passes away in Boston. I go to see her and I'm kind of going through all this kind of emotional stuff. I'm at a bar. And this guy gets up and they go, we're doing them on open mic comedy. And I'm like, oh, and I watch it and they were horrible. And I was like, I could do that.
You could be horrible like
that.
I could be at least that bad.
I'm at least that bad. And then 6 months later, I started doing it. The first time I got on stage, I knew that it was a positive. I had found negative outlets and different things to use it for. But comedy, it's like...
It's a coping skill.
Explains me, right? In a way that explains all the questions I had in the back of Sunday school and all the annoying things I did to my, you know, all my friends and my teachers. And like, it's the outlet I needed to let all these ideas out so they don't rattle around in my brain.
Did making the class laugh get you through school?
All the time.
Yeah, yeah.
All the time.
That was like you all day long just thinking, oh, I could turn that into something. I might go to the office for that one, but I'm going to say it anyway. And get the class to laugh, and then you get that adrenaline.
I've retired teachers, homie. They quit. I've got my retirement. What am I still doing here?
Is that weird, though? Like, when you realize that that's been your coping mechanism and you find that stage and you find that thing that lets you get it out, but then you go backstage and you're talking to the other comics, and you're like, they got the same thing going on that I do.
Yeah. The hard thing with comedy is that there's a pendulum of emotions where you have this super high, and then when that's done, that pendulum swings back the other way, and it's where you end up when that pendulum swings. When Robin Williams died, I've never had a celebrity die where I just really cared that much or affected me. When he passed away, I don't know what it's like to be Robin Williams. I don't know what it's like to be that famous, but I know what it's like to own a room. I know what it's like to have a room of 200 or 300 people and just own it and kill them. And everybody in there wants to be your friend. Everybody in there loves you for that moment. And then you go to the bar, you go wherever, you go eat. And then about 2 or 3 hours after that, you're alone in a hotel room all by yourself. And then it just swings and it hits. And I know what that feels like. And I think that may, I don't know where his head was at, but that's what affected me about that.
So you find that note and realize, wow, I've been dealing with this for
since I was a child, and I've never talked about it because nobody talks about it.
And so how do you start putting together, I'm going to put together a show?
So I thought, comics will talk about things on stage that people won't talk about. So who better to kill that stigma than comedians? And it's not hard to find comics that struggle with depression. And so So I started making some phone calls and talked to, it's funny, I don't know that we'd even talked about depression. I just assumed.
Right.
And so I called Ellis, hey, there's this thing, you know, you want to do it. I just assumed.
You knew depression. That too. Yeah. We were in that study.
Oh, yeah. So we, Carl, and I just called a couple of comics and they're like, yeah. And so we started meeting together and then started thinking about how do we format it? How do we do the show? What's it going to actually look like?
And so what's really interesting to me is that you brought in some experts so that it wasn't just a bunch of comics figuring out how to deal with mental health.
Sure. Right.
Might not be advised by anyone. So you brought in some legit sources who know what they're talking about and said, how do we put this together? Who'd you bring in?
So I've got one of my closest friends. He's a doctor, and so he diagnoses and prescribes all day long. I've got a nephew. He's a psychiatrist at the Veterans Hospital in Reno in the ER. So he sees, diagnoses. And so I talked to them, and I said, so here's what the show is. What are the topics you'd want to see covered? If you were to come to a show like this as a professional, as somebody who deals with this every day, what are all the topics and the things you would want to see discussed?
And you said fart jokes.
Yeah.
Because he too isn't.
And then after we had these long conversations, I said, I need you to send me notes of our conversations so that I have these as a reference point. And so looking at all these notes and then also looking on suicide prevention websites and talking with, I've got lots of therapist friends.
You're going through training.
Yeah. And doing my own training. There's websites where you can certify for different parts of suicide prevention. I came up with 5 questions. And within these 5 questions, it really covers every topic that we would want to talk about. And it gives us a format and an organization to it because we don't want to do this show with just us. We want to duplicate this and replicate it and run it across the country. All right. I want to have a group of comics in Southern California, Northern California, and Washington and Oregon and so formatting it was a big important part at the very beginning is figuring out so that it's going to look the same regardless of what comics are up there on stage.
Yeah. Well, it sounds hilarious and informative. We need to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the format. We'll talk about what the show looks like, what it feels like, what those 5 questions are, and learn a little bit more about how this is ongoing. We'll be back with more on Dying to Ask right after this.
KCRA3, your best choice for news at 11.
Live team coverage tonight.
No Sacramento station covers Northern California better than KCRA3.
We have breaking news on that rescue.
With resources to bring you the story wherever it happens.
Get those cameras away from me!
And detailed perspectives you won't see anywhere else.
Livecopter 3 shows that fire burning.
The experience you've come to trust every night.
Here's what we know right now.
Your best choice for news at 11. KCRA3, where the news comes first.
All right, so it's a show about depression and suicide.
Mm-hmm. Super funny.
But it's comedy. Yeah. How does that work?
Oh. Well, I think a lot of it is that we all know each other so well, and there's a rapport, and we've met together, and we've heard each other's stories. Like, we have about a dozen comics that want to be part of this, and so they've come to our meetings with us, and we sit down and we go, well, we need to know that you're screwed up enough. Yeah. Part of this. So what's your story? You know, and really interview to find out, you know, where do you come from and what's your story and your information. And then that way, when we're doing the show, we kind of know who has answers to different questions. And
I cry at every one of these.
He does. He cry. He's an easy cry. And then we mock him for it. I was like, oh, Alice is being sensitive.
There's a pool. We want to find out who's going to cry first.
Yeah, nobody meant, that's always Ellis. Everybody knows it's Ellis. It's just deciding how far into it is he going to cry.
I haven't had that before, though. I haven't had a group.
To cry on stage?
I don't cry on stage. But I just haven't had a group of people that, you know what? After I cry, I need someone to laugh at me.
Yeah.
I need someone to go, yeah, idiot, that's what we all do, and keep it moving, not make me feel like a weird person.
Sit there and wallow in it. Yeah. Get over yourself.
And kind of see how funny it is, you know, because that's where most of all these jokes really come from. It sounds like you're talking about salad, but really, like, that you wrote that on a really sad day.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So once you find the most messed up people that you can for the show,
yeah,
what's the format of the show once you arrive? And who shows up at this show? Like, who goes?
I honestly,
my, says, so what are you doing fucking night? So many people, I'm going to a comedy show about suicide.
Like, yeah.
Who's your audience?
My opening line was, a comedy show about depression and suicide. I don't know who's more screwed up. You people for coming here or for us for putting it on.
Well, I booked you for the show.
It's in the name.
It is. It's in the name. It's 1 degree. So there are two people in our audience. There's people who struggle with depression, and there's people who love people who struggle with depression.
Yeah.
And that's that 1 degree. And so the show, really everything is addressed to both of those people to know what kind of questions can you ask. People are afraid to ask, are you feeling suicidal? Because they feel like, well, if they say yes, then it's like, crap, what do I do now? And that they think that it might encourage the behavior to ask about it.
Yeah.
And so we talk specifically about that. What questions, what things you can say and
so
not say.
So you have four people who take part in the show.
Yeah.
You each come out and do what, like a 5 to 7?
Yeah,
set?
We do 5 to 7. I want the audience to know all of us and know this is what we do and this is who we are and kind of know our personalities. And I leave it up to the comics if they want to do topical about depression or if they just want to make them laugh for that 5 to 7 minutes. My opening, I kind of do dark comedy because I want the audience to feel like it's okay to laugh at dark things.
Do you start the show?
I start the show.
So you hit them hard first.
I do. I talk
in the
about
gut.
Do you cry, Ellis?
In the first part of the show, it's just
comedy.
Funny.
Yeah, we're just doing our comedy.
It can be a little dark, and it's a little. Once everybody starts talking, and I'm sitting in front of all these people sharing my feelings, I weep.
Not true. Like
snot bubbles or anything, but like, you know.
No, that's backstage. Yeah. So we all do the time, and then I come back out on stage, and then I kind of set the tone that we're going to change the tone a little bit, that now we're going to talk about things that are serious and real, and we're going to be vulnerable. And for us to be vulnerable means we're going to take emotional risk with strangers, and for us to do that, we need a safe place. And this stage is our safe place. It's not your safe place.
No.
It's our safe place.
Especially if you're at a Gallagher show, because then
it's yes. And then, everybody comes out and we run through these 5 questions.
What's the first question?
I want everybody describes what your depression looks like. What does it feel like? How does it come on?
What does yours look like, Alice?
Mine is like an absence of me. It's an absence of emotion at all. I can kind of feel like when it's over, more than anything, I feel like it's over. I feel like, where have I been for the last 2 days or 3 days, or it could be a year. I lost a year once. And what it feels is like, with no emotional attachment to anything, then why live? I don't get suicidal, but why eat? Why get up? Why go to work? And that can kind of slowly kind of lead you to the, you know, bad things. And that's what it feels like to me. It feels like this overwhelming anxiety that's overwhelmed me to a point where now I've shut down and I really don't see the point of anything. And then in that state, I'm incredibly reactive. So depending on my emotion or mood, I can make really poor life choices. Mm-hmm. And then wake up kind of 2 weeks later and go, how did I spend that much money? Why? How am I in this place? Who is this person?
Yeah.
Those bad life choices are kind of what depression does to me. That's what it feels like to me.
Yeah.
What's the second question?
Second question is, what do other people do that contribute to making it worse?
Hmm.
And there we talk about things not to say. You know, I had depression once, just get over it, you know, change your situation. In religious communities, it's that, you know, you need to be closer to Jesus. You have depression because you're not close enough to Jesus. And, you know, that's hard. That piles on the guilt, you know, that's, I'm just a bad person. And that's why I have depression.
They didn't do that to me at church though, for
no,
the record.
They did.
I was Catholic. Yeah, they were very...
Oh, yeah.
Non-guilt.
You lie.
Non-guilt.
You lie.
Which Catholic church is that? It's not my church.
So we talk about, you know, things not to say.
Interesting.
Things that are making,
which
you know,
is great for the people in the audience who love the people.
Exactly.
Who
exactly.
It. That's great. What's the third question?
Third question is, what do other people do that help? So then it's asking specific questions. When you ask somebody who struggles with depression, how are you feeling? And we say, fine. Fine's like our code word for like, I kind of want to die right now, but I don't want to talk about it.
Right.
Asking specific, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, where are you at? you know, 10 being standing on a chair, you know, 9 being tying the rope, you know, where are you in the progression of that depression? And what do you need? If you're at a 5, what do you need from me at that number? Do you need me to leave you alone? And just at not being afraid to ask, you know, do you need to take a ride on your Harley? You need a couple hours, you need a day off, do you need to go to the gym? What do you need? And being specific about it. It was funny, we had the night we did our last show, the shooting in Davis, the officer that was shot, the officer that trained her and put her in the field, his wife was at our show. Mm-hmm. And he called her, sent her a text, hey, call me as soon as you can, because he didn't want her to hear about it on the news. He wanted to hear from him. Yeah. And so she gets on, as soon as the show's over, she calls him, and he tells her what happened. And she says, how are you doing? He says, I'm fine. She goes, well, I just learned that means you're really not doing very good, but you don't want to talk about it. And he said, yeah, that's pretty accurate. She goes, all right, on a scale of 1 to 10, where are you at and what do you need from me? And he goes, well, he goes, I'm like at a 4 or 5, I think on a 10. He goes, I'm all right, though. I'm here with the kids, and just finish your evening and do your stuff and come home. And then, you know, and then we can talk then. And so it changed their conversation by listening to the show and what kind of questions, you know,
that was exactly what you wanted.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That must have been an amazing feeling.
Exactly. And it happened that night. Yeah. We had a few stories like that.
That's
yeah.
incredible. Yeah. You know what's interesting? I watched the YouTube video of that part of the show. Well, mm-hmm. I watched YouTube video of the whole show.
But yeah.
What I thought was so interesting is that you do what I would call the hit and run, where you kind of hit somebody with something really super serious, and then you run off with something funny.
Yeah.
And growing up Irish, that's how we do life.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like
yeah.
there's no funnier thing to go to than an Irish funeral. Like yeah. you have a yes. great, great time, and then Ellis, you cry.
Yeah.
But then you laugh some more,
yeah.
and you know, you probably have a cocktail along the way. Like it's
yes.
a good time
yes.
because it's grief through celebration.
Yeah.
And that sounds a lot to me like what your show is, because people will listen. To get them to change, you have to get them to listen, and
yes.
to get them to listen, sometimes you have to entertain.
Yes, very true.
You can write that down if you
yeah. I like that.
Yeah,
like
but
that. Yeah.
But is that can you see that in an audience when they start reacting? Because it's probably a little bit like kind of killing a room, only you're getting
it is there's a friend of mine, Daniel Dorr, he does motivational speaking and keynote speeches and has a book. And he came up to me after the show. He said, that was a great show. I go, thanks. You know, you hear that. And he goes, no.
That was a great show about depression and suicide.
He goes, not just like a great show about depression. He goes, it was just so engaging from the start all the way through. He said, I think great comics make us think. He goes, and you guys made us think and feel. At this event, which was, I think, probably the best compliment, you know, for what we're doing.
And I've never gotten that. I've gotten a standing O every once in a 5-year period. I've had people say, you were a great comedian, or someone say, I'm going to follow you after the show because I thought you were amazing. But not someone like, oh, I really feel close to you.
Yeah.
What you said changed how I think about my own inner dialogue or something like that. I've never even experienced that.
And everybody had different people they related to. And that's why I didn't want to do a one-man show with just me, because it is so different for everyone.
Yeah.
You know, some people were like, I related to Steph. I related to Ellis. There were things Carlos cracked me up, and I really got him. And so that was, you know, the goal of it, is if you have different perspectives.
Did you find that uncomfortable, Ellis, when somebody said how personal it was for them?
I thought I would. That's why I've never talked about it.
Yeah.
And now it's my favorite thing to do. It's the favorite show that I do. I can't even replicate it in my normal act, because that's not how I'm feeling. I'm usually at the club, okay? So everybody came up, they got the babysitter, you know, they paid the money, everybody got the parking, everybody's looking good. You know, if it's a Thursday, it's, you know, side piece night or whatever it is. Everybody's here to have fun, you know? And I can, and the stuff that we're doing that's up, it's funny, but I'm there for an hour, and that's not the kind of really comic I am. It's not what I do. But this show, I just get to be me and do a bunch of jokes that I also wrote that are funny, that are me, and show a side of me that I didn't think people wanted to see. I don't want to dwell in it, you know? So why would people, and to see people go, no, I'm crazy too. I have that thought too. It's so cathartic in a way I didn't even.
The show's been good.
So has it helped both of you just with your own depression stuff?
Everybody.
Everybody
in the show, just there's like a loyalty. Steph was struggling a couple weeks ago, and she sent me a text message. Hey, I'm just struggling right today, and I just feel like because of what we're doing that I need to let you be aware of it, because you're part of that story now and you're part of that narrative in my life. And it was just a, you know, that is. We just... it's our therapy. It's been very therapeutic because we meet regularly. We meet after the shows. We meet before the shows a day or two to go over questions and different aspects and things that we want to change. And every one of those meetings is just a
and then make fun
therapy.
Of each other. Yeah. So that when we do it on stage.
It's so dark. Our meetings are so so dark. And my wife just goes, how can you do that? How can
so
you say
long,
that?
So but so funny.
And then we're like, write that down.
I know.
That was mean.
That was mean. That's
that was cruel. Yeah, that was.
That's true.
Wish I thought of it.
That's very
All
true.
All right, we're going to take another break. When we come back, I want to talk about what life as a comic is like these days. We'll do that right after this.
First on the scene.
Flames ripped through a Modesto business.
First with the facts.
And one suspect is in custody.
So you're first to know. KCRA 3 News at 4.
Your first chance to get up to speed.
We are the people and we are the power.
To learn what's happening right now.
Another spot fire breaking out across Highway 20.
And to help you prepare for what's next.
When it happens in Northern California, get it first at 4 from the team you trust. KCRA 3 News at 4, where the news comes first.
I read that the Laugh Factory used to have an on-staff psychologist. Maybe still does.
Huh. Wow.
Should.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Isn't that interesting?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Which, now, where?
The Laugh Factory.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, I had read that they did because, like you were saying, the statistics of depression were so high among comics.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that? Like, could you be a happy, well-adjusted...
No.
Nope.
I'm sorry, I interrupted. No, continue over your question.
You knew where I was going with
no
it.
No way.
Yeah. I don't. It was funny. I was having a conversation with. It was two other comics. We were in Twin Falls, Idaho, at a show, and one of the comics was talking about his alcoholic father that was abusive. His mom was a closet alcoholic, and his father would physically beat him. And the other comic, she goes, "Oh, that'll get you stage time."
Yeah.
And he just let, we both all kind of went, yeah. Because that's where a lot of it comes
Some
from.
Some guys get all the luck. I do know comics. Yeah. We brought this
there's
up.
A like, Cheney, Cheney, there's
I
a
know Cheney. He's so well adjusted. I'm more worried about him than anybody else. Like
because
how are you holding it together? How are you? He's talented and great. He's a good comic. So how can you come across as so normal? Your messed up must be so deep within you. You know, like
you
I
conceal
could,
it.
I would
so
swear
well.
In court that he's the most healthy. You know, he's like an Asian version of Jesus almost. He's like a super nice, and he gets on stage too. And it's not like his comedy suffers. He's great, but I don't
I'm
believe
still going
for a
on
second
that Asian version of Jesus.
Well, yeah, he had a mullet at a certain point, and I don't know. It's a thing, but I don't believe that he's happy.
Yeah,
I don't believe what's comedy like now? It's every single night going up and trying to impress drunk people that are sitting there judging you, like while you spill your guts to try and make them laugh. You know, you get hired and fired. I worked the clubs. If you were in corporate, it doesn't matter. You get hired and fired every night. You don't do a good job tonight, you never get hired again. Your reputation's always on the line.
On that show.
And people, after you do a great job, they applaud and they clap and they tell you, oh, you did a great job. But when you suck, they tell you that too. And they might put it online. And they might put a comment on it.
Yeah.
You know, and how often does that happen? You're bagging groceries and somebody comes up and they go, hey, you know what? I mean, you're horrible at your job.
You do club comedy, right?
I love it.
We both do,
but he does a lot more.
But how long is a set? How long are you out there for?
I mean, the host usually does 10 to 15. Feature does 20 to 30. And then the headliner will do 45 to an hour.
Yeah, just depending upon the club.
Depending on what they want. I like to do an hour, but I will do as much as they give me.
How often do you change up a show? Or do you have different shows?
If you listen to my set and you came back 6 months later, I'd say half of it was different. You know, and there's
a lot of that's for our own boredom too.
Right.
Absolutely.
You know,
I think so.
It's like you could do your same material, and I know that's going to kill, but I want to do something different. I did something. I was about a year and a half ago. I went up and just did 5 minutes just to eat it, just on purpose.
Yeah.
Really?
On purpose. It's like I could go up and make people laugh for
did
5 minutes. That's easy.
Did
I want to go
it?
Up. I want. No, they laugh.
It's hard.
Much.
It's hard to eat it.
They did.
It's
they
hard.
Laugh. I just thought I'm going to do really dark, twisted stuff where people are just going to think I'm the biggest jerk on the planet. And then I started. And then Jenny, she goes, "All right, here's the date. Here's when you're going to go up." And so then I had to start writing stuff. And it's like, do I just write really stupid jokes? I go, no, I'm just going to try and come across as just a jerk, like the host. she goes to hug me and I pushed her away. Because I just wanted that first impression of the audience, like, wow, what a douche, right?
And they loved it.
And then I started thinking about material I have. I go, you know, I've got material I do about my kids. If I just have a different demeanor, like, I'm not joking. And so my opening line was, I said, I found, and I just did it dead serious. After pushing the host away, I said, I found the best way to discipline your children is through ridicule and belittlement. Because that gives them emotional scars, and CPS can't see that. And then I just let it sit there with the silence, and people like, you were laughing, and I'm like, you weren't supposed to laugh at that. And then I just went darker, and I talked about my friend having cancer, and I had a little mole cut off going, yeah, whatever. I had cancer. You don't see me crying about it.
Yeah.
And I would just let it just be awkward, and people are like hiding their face laughing because they were embarrassed to have people see him laughing. And it was fun, though. It was just for me. I was so excited about that show to just go up there and eat it for 5 minutes.
When you see them eating it up, what's that like?
When you're killing?
Mm-hmm.
It's you own the world.
When the first time a bird flies, or the first time a cow moo, and you feel it, like, it becomes, you're unconscious, and you're in the right place, doing the right thing, and the thing I really love is people can't fake a laugh, right? Like,
I can.
They can't, or they won't.
They can't. Like, you can tell it's fake.
Yeah.
There's something about it, and there's different laughs.
Do a fake laugh.
Give me.
He's got it. Oh, yeah, that's good.
It sounds.
That was all right, though. Yeah. That wasn't a bad fake laugh.
You know, but there's different laughs, right? There's like, did the gross laugh. You know, I do this joke about my dad. My biological father was black and Native American, actually, but he raised me traditionally black and he left. You know, and he doesn't think that's funny, but that's one of those jokes, you know, you kind of had to be there. Right?
Yeah.
And people don't like that joke. And the people that laugh at it, they go, oh.
Yeah.
And that kind of groany laugh is like what I wanted from that joke. You know what I mean? And then, like, there's other laughs that are like, it's just like a silly, goofy laugh. And somebody's just, you know, you're doing something stupid.
We've talked about this, doing a seminar for young comics, especially on the different reasons why people laugh.
Right.
Because people will laugh because they're uncomfortable.
Right. And I want the all the different value. Ones.
You can say something rude and crude, and they'll laugh. And then afterwards, they'll say, I don't ever want to see them again because they're so raunchy and crude. But they will laugh in that moment. They'll laugh to let you know that they recognize where mm-hmm. you're going. They recognize what you're talking about. They'll laugh to give you credit for something, right? It was clever, and so they laugh for accreditation.
Right.
And, yeah.
Brad, you do, you describe it as corporate comedy. What does that mean?
So I do magic and comedy, and corporate events, you add a zero to what you would pay in a club.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they pay better, but you've got to be politically correct. You've got to know what boundaries are, and it's a tightrope.
Ellis, that's so not going to be good for you.
No,
I do corporate.
He does. Yeah.
I do corporate. Yeah. But yeah, they're very.
It's different.
They are different because they didn't come there for comedy.
No,
a lot of times they didn't even know there was going to be comedy, which is what you don't want. You really want it to be set up that they know that.
So, what is the purpose of bringing someone like you in then?
Like a dinner banquet.
Okay.
Right. They've got their awards banquet, whatever it might be, and we're going to have dinner and a comedy show, and then we
holiday
have our
party.
Awards, holiday okay. party. I used to make a quarter of my income for the whole year in the 3 weeks before Christmas.
Really? Is that a tougher audience then?
It is tougher. And then depending upon the audience, if it's a cold room, then I do more magic because I could bring people up on stage you have the interaction. They're like, oh, he's got Bob from accounting. And if they're a warm audience, then I'll do more stand-up stuff. So you just kind of have to be on the fly. They're usually shorter sets.
He plays the guitar.
I don't on stage. No.
I've seen you do it. He juggles. He does the whole thing.
He's making stuff up now.
I know. It's good stuff.
I don't juggle, but I have people I pay that juggle. Yeah.
You pay jugglers.
I do.
Love it. So what's the power then of laughter, the healing, as we kind of tie it back to the show that we're here to talk about? But what is the power of laughter, not only for you guys being on the other end of it, but also for those of us when it's a real laugh?
I do it purely for my ego.
I think it literally kills pain. When people when they talk about suicide, suicide isn't to end your life; it's to end the pain. It really is about pain. When you look at all the studies, the people who have survived, it wasn't that they wanted to die; they just wanted that pain to stop. And you can't have that pain while you're laughing. You can't have that pain while you're laughing. It goes away, and it goes away for a while, and then you need more laughs to make it go away. So it's good therapy, but it's not enough therapy. You know, I think you need other things on top of that.
Yeah. It's good enough for me usually. It's like kind of my church. If I go to some place and I do all these jokes and people laugh, then they're kind of agreeing with me. They're kind of saying, I understand what you're saying. And to me, that's all I need. And to hear all those people having a good time and whatever, like, it gives me purpose. Mm-hmm. And then tomorrow, I'm desperate to do that again.
Yeah. Our last question that we cover in our show is, what do we do that helps us? And that's where we talk about comedy and music and therapy and medications and all the things that we do, you know, us not isolating, us having people to reach out to. You've got to have that friend that you would call if you're standing on the bridge, right? And how do you get that kind of friend? You know, this is how you get that kind of friend, is from doing a show like this and that brotherhood and that camaraderie. You got to have that. Who would you call standing on the bridge? That's your dead body club.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your dead body club.
It is. I actually have lapel pins that I give to my closest friends. That's the dead body club. It says DBC on it. Does it say dead body club?
No.
Has a dead body with a pool of blood and arrows sticking in it. And then the writing around the outside says, if you don't know what it is, then you're probably not a member. And I give those to my closest, those friends that I would call. Yeah. And that if I had a dead body, if I had somebody I had to get rid of, who would you call? Who's your friend then? Who's your friend then? Who's in that club?
I'm calling Jeff.
Ellis did the logo.
I got a problem.
Ellis did the logo for me.
I'm looking at it right now. It's awesome. Well, guys, it sounds awesome, and I'm really glad I followed through on the rest of that weird email that I got. What's a good way to keep up with both of you? Ellis, how do people keep track of you?
On Instagram and all that stuff. If you look up Ellis Rodriguez, I'm usually easy to find there. And then we got a show coming up.
We got a show March 6th. And our website is onedegreeofseparation.life. So it's the number onedegreeofseparation.life. And that has our shows and has contact information and all that stuff. Has our promo video on there that you watched. So.
Well, best of luck. And
Thank you.
Could see this really becoming a thing across the country. And I love that it's helping you guys, but it's also helping all these other people who maybe don't even know they need the help yet.
Yes.
Thank you.
4 a.m. It's a new day. Okay, so the roosters aren't even awake yet. But KCRA3 Morning News is, if it happened overnight, Deirdre, Teo, Tony, and Ty have got it covered. Tamara's forecast is so accurate, your day practically plans itself. And Melody monitors the roadways so you always have the best routes to work. It may be too early to see the sun, but you can always see the three and get the three. News, weather, traffic. KCRA3 from 4 to 7, where the news comes first.
You said something funny to me the other day. You said, I'm starting to learn a lot of things because of this podcast.
That's true. That's true.
So what are you going to sprinkle into the Cosmic Cocktail Party from this show? What'd you get?
Oh, man. So much about just depression, anxiety. And just I love that we can cover topics that just have stigmas to them. Mm-hmm. And we can talk about things that aren't talked about. And I think that it's really important. And I've learned a lot in doing that here.
Yeah. And I think that there are a lot of fields that, and I would say maybe newsrooms kind of fall into this, where a lot of what he was talking about is very prevalent.
Yeah. Every time he said something about, like, oh yeah, when comics get together, it gets super dark. I'm like, oh my gosh.
That's us.
You the same thing?
So true. All right, we'll keep it with the funny. Review of the week came from somebody who identified themselves as South Davis. The headline for the review was Solid Dog Walking Podcast, which is dog lovers. That works for us.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed these podcasts. Really interesting breadth of topics and great production quality. Clearly talking about me. No, I'm kidding.
Okay.
Plus more episodes that are just about the perfect length for my walk with my dog, Tycho.
Does the dog get to listen also, or is it headphones? This is what I want to know.
I don't know. That's what you're dying to ask.
That's what I'm dying to ask.
All right. If you're wondering what I would sound like as a guest on a podcast, if you haven't had enough of me today, check out the Launch Yourself Today show. It's with the host, David Trotter. He does this whole show about motivation, and he reached out to me, and I was a guest on his show recently. I totally loved the conversation. It was really fun. At least I had a good time. I don't know if you will, but let me know. But check out David's show. He's a great guy, and it's the Launch Yourself Today show. He's got a lot of really good guests, and you can find it in all the usual podcasting places where you would find the Dying to Ask podcast. Follow us on Instagram. You'll find me at Run, Read, Sip, the show at Dying to Ask, and Producer Jeff at...
At Producer Jeff,
which keeps it really easy. Screen grab the show, and give me a couple of words on what you got out of it. Love to know, like, what really stuck out with you today.
Yeah.
And with a show about depression, suicide, and comedy, I can only imagine what you're going to come up with that will look super inappropriate on Instagram. So keep them coming, and we'll talk to you next week on Dying to Ask.
Bye.